Hello and welcome to this week's news and features roundup for the aerospace, defence and aviation industry across Africa and the Middle East. I'm Alan Peaford. And as the world celebrates the apparent good news about vaccines to beat off the virus, airline and aerospace share prices rise on global stock markets. And who knows, we could also be seeing a new era of collaborative international relations on the political stage. But we head off to Africa, where the African Airline Association, AFRA, has been holding its annual General Assembly, where issues about recovery and the future dominated talks. Delegates might take some comfort from satellite and connectivity technology firm Inmarsat, who released findings from a survey of travellers about their plans to return to the air. And Steve Nichols would be reporting from that event. But first, here are the news headlines from across the region, read to you by Marcella Nethersole at the Times Aerospace News Desk.
Hello, and here is this week's aviation news from across the Middle East and Africa. Boeing has won three military contracts with the US Air Force for training services and support in the Middle East, worth more than $800 million. The first supports the Qatar Emiri Air Force with its F-15QA program over a five-year contract period. The second provides maintenance and logistics support for the Qatar Air Force during their pre-delivery training, which starts early next year, while the third provides spares and logistics support once the aircraft are delivered to Qatar. Boeing will establish and operate an aircrew and maintenance training centre at Qatar's Al Udeid Air Base through 2024. UAE national carrier Etihad has announced a major restructuring with the aim to transform what it describes as mid-sized full-service carrier, concentrating on its fleet of wide-body aircraft with leaner and flatter scalable organisational structure. Members of the top management team have left or will be leaving as part of the restructure. Meanwhile, the airline also warned its pilots of immediate compulsory layoffs, as demand saying that the air travel failed to recover from the coronavirus as quickly. This decision came as IATA and the International Transport Workers Federation this week issued a joint statement calling for urgent government interventions to prevent an employment catastrophe in the aviation industry. Estimates from the Air Transport Action Group suggest some 4.8 million aviation workers' jobs are at risk as a result of air travel demand falling more than 75% since August 2019. Nigeria's government has approved a $10.3 million bailout for domestic airlines following the adverse effects of COVID-19. Aviation Minister Hadi Sirika said the government had also approved an additional $2.5 million in funding to aviation agencies. He said this is to cushion the sorry state out of most of them, which has made payment of salaries difficult for many of them. Fly Dubai is the latest airline in the UAE to start flights between Dubai and Tel Aviv and will launch the route on the 26th of November. Gaith Al Gaith, Chief Executive Officer at Fly Dubai, said the following recent bilateral agreement, the start of scheduled flights, will contribute to the economic development and create further opportunities for investment in pursuit of shared interests and values. Kenya's Safe Air has started scheduled services to Dubai, Mogadishu, Nairobi, which will operate every Saturday. The first direct service will operate between Mombasa and Dubai. SANAD has successfully completed the maintenance of 100 GEnx engines on behalf of GE Aviation. SANAD was the first MRO partner with GE Aviation's Global Services Network to obtain MRO certification for the GEnx engine and remains the only certified GEnx MRO partner in the MENA region. Abu Dhabi Aviation has achieved IS-BAO Stage 3 accreditation awarded by the International Business Aviation Council. The company has also taken delivery of two Leonardo AW169 oil and gas industry compliant helicopters. Etihad Engineering has taken an order for 1.3 million face masks to be manufactured at its newly established in-house face mask production facility. Over the next 3 months, the medical face masks will be distributed to staff across the entire Etihad Aviation Group, from cabin and ground crew to catering, cargo, engineering employees and medical professionals. And finally, if you've wondered what's been happening to all those A380s that for so long have been the flagships for the Gulf carriers, well, this week, Emirates Sky Cargo made its first trip with a dedicated A380 mini freighter. It carried medical supplies between Seoul and Amsterdam via Dubai. So your favourite airliner still has a job to do, Alan. It's back to you in the studio.
Oh, don't get me started on that, Ella. It was great to fly on one with Emirates last week, and I'm going to miss them, I can say. And of course, flying again was of course the key talking point at the AFRA annual meeting. It should have been in Angola, but of course it became a virtual event. technically, still hosted by Angola, who will be doing it for real in Luanda next year. The country's Minister of Transport, Ricardo de Abreu, set the scene when he formally opened the three-day event.
Although we are not signatories as yet of the single African air transport market, SATAN, Angola is committed to the spirit of the Yamoussoukro decision and has already been implementing several air services agreements with our sister countries and airlines within SATAN principles. Today, more than ever before, we encourage you, the African aviation industry, to deliberate and come up with game-changing resolutions.
So it sounded like though the physical SATAM deals are grinding slowly, there may be an appetite for genuine cooperation, collaboration, and perhaps consolidation. Listening into the event was African Aerospace Air Transport Editor Victoria Moores and Airports Editor Chloe Greenbank, who's also editor of Regional Gateway magazine. Well, Victoria, let me start with you. Recovery was dominating the agenda, wasn't it?
Yep, absolutely. So the conversation was completely focused on how do African airlines come back from this crisis when we've seen very little demand? What do you need to happen to get up and running? And the theme of the CEO's panel was all about cooperation, which is a topic, obviously, that we hear a lot about from African airlines.
So what's actually happening then, do you think? Are we going to see something? Real concrete changes?
I think that it's interesting because the idea of cooperation took on lots of different forms during the CEO's panel. So what stood out to me was that the CEO of Kenya Airways, he was talking about the fact that he's actually discontinued for the time being the joint venture with Air France KLM because he just doesn't feel as though they've got enough continuity, enough predictability to their schedules for that joint venture to work for now. But he was talking about the fact that they will need to go back to it. Somebody like Sanjeev, the CEO of Astral Aviation, was talking about the fact that he's had a great 6 months. It's been absolutely brilliant for him. He's formed a whole load of new partnerships. He's been working with the World Health Organization. He's been distributing vaccines. He's been distributing protective equipment. And he's grown his fleet. And also you've got Rwanda that's forming this partnership with Qatar Airways. And Yvonne, their CEO, was talking about how that's progressing and moving ahead. So I think that there were lots of different voices on cooperation, but always this message that African airlines need to cooperate more among themselves.
Well, let's listen to Yvonne Makolo now.
Especially now in the short term, what we're seeing a lot more of in terms of new approaches of collaboration is beyond the normal alliances, airline alliances. We're seeing more collaboration between airlines, airports, tourism boards, governments, especially in light of having the right protocols in place to make travel more comfortable and give people confidence to travel. So a very strong collaboration between airlines, airports and governments, especially the ministries of health, to put those protocols in place to jumpstart the industry. And I think a lot more needs to be done on that front, especially on the government side.
And there were more demands too, Victoria.
I think that there's been an imperative for African airlines to work together for a really long time now. Every AFRA event that we go to, we hear that there is this real need for cooperation. One of the interesting things that Yvonne from Rwanda said is that the cooperation that she's seeing is actually across the various parts of the industry, so in a different direction. So it's between airports, between governments and between airlines, where they're joining up their own part. And then perhaps that might lead to a more joined up approach.
Just to go back, and you mentioned Sanjeev just now, I was fascinated actually to hear his call for airlines to actually think about their cargo business and take cargo seriously. This is what he said.
I'm a firm believer that that airlines need to do a little bit more towards treating cargo as a part of the core business. And this is something I would like to mention very honestly to my fellow colleagues who are the CEOs of all the African airlines is that please make sure that you take cargo seriously. Please give it a priority in strategy, give it a priority in fleet planning, network development. But the most important thing is to make sure that cargo is represented at the board. This is something that has not happened in many, many airlines. And we always see boards which are being occupied by colleagues who are in the passenger business. But I really believe that the entire role that cargo played during the pandemic is a wake-up call. And I really believe that cargo has to play a very important part for the next 1 to 3 years. And every airline, whether it's in Africa or beyond Africa, has to make sure that the view of the cargo team has to be incorporated in every aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. He put out a very strong message there. I think it was, remember cargo. This isn't just for the crisis. Cargo has a real role for your businesses, particularly for the next 1 to 2 years. You know, you've got to focus more on this and on cargo cooperation. So he was talking about the cargo people coming together, forming cooperations on capacity and making sure that you can get goods across Africa and beyond Africa. And he was saying, have a cargo person on every airline board. He was really pushing that agenda.
So, Victoria, do you think we're moving beyond words?
Yeah, I think that's the question, though, Alan. It's, do we talk to one another or do we actually do it? So I think that again, has been the theme. That's what we've seen a lot when we've talked about these corporations. There's an awful lot of talk. And for Africa to really come out of this stronger in the way that they're hoping to, it's going to require the action.
So, Chloe, you were watching the AFRA event and looking at it from an airport perspective. Now, airports have had a pretty difficult time. We talk a lot about the airlines, but don't think very much about the airports. How tough has it been?
Yeah, I mean, COVID-19 has devastated the whole industry. There are no exceptions, airports, airlines, you know, they've all been suffering, the tourism sector. African airports are certainly no exception. Ali Townsley revealed that traffic has been down at its lowest point April to June by 97%, and overall for 2020 down 60%. It's forecast to be down 60% and a loss of $2.6 billion. So it's been devastating across the board.
Now, of course, Africa hasn't really yet had the second wave that we've seen in Europe. I mean, are the African airports preparing for it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all eyes are sort of at the moment, I think, on what's going on in Europe and in the West with the second wave. And again, you know, Africa is concerned that the same thing's going to happen there, and they don't want to have to close their borders again and stop international travel. So, you know, they've introduced a raft of measures from social distancing and mask wearing and, you know, deep sanitization projects within the airports. But yeah, I mean, they're hoping they can keep it at bay without having to close airports down again.
Because ACI was trying pretty hard to get the airports to become involved in a sort of health accreditation, weren't they? Was much said about that?
Yeah, so ACI, back in May, ACI introduced some guidelines for African airports based on 6 pillars, and they included airport preparedness, staff motivation, healthy airport measures and healthy airport experiences, financial stability and communications. So that was just initially to get airports back up and running, part of the recovery process. And since then, the ACI health accreditation program has been rolled out. It was back in July they started rolling it out. Since then, I think they've had sort of 50 airports in Africa interested in signing up. 29 have actually committed to the program and 4 have been accredited. So that's Mauritius, Ghana, and 2 airports in Tunisia have been accredited. The numbers are still quite low, you know, when you think about the number of airports there are in Africa. So they really need to keep pushing for airports to sign up to the scheme. And it's about, you know, making sure that their measures are in line with global standards, their health measures are in line with global standards.
Now, as Victoria was just saying, there was a real talk about collaboration now between the airlines and the airports, not just arguing about aeronautical revenues and so on. So if there is this collaboration, do you think the airports see this as an opportunity as well for change?
Yeah, it absolutely is an opportunity for change. And that's one thing that I think has been consistent across the AFRA sessions, is that collaboration and cooperation from the airports, airlines and regulators as well is going to be absolutely vital in recovery. And also coming to the table with a united voice on the need for pre-departure testing while we're waiting for an effective vaccine and in place of quarantine is going to be essential, and that will require airlines and airports to be united on that front.
Chloe, thanks very much for joining us today. So getting passengers comfortable with the idea of flying is the key, but it seems that some areas are more likely than others to grab their bags and get on board. Steve Nichols reports.
COVID-19 will drastically change travel habits forever. That was the headline result from Inmarsat's recent passenger confidence tracker. This was the largest global survey since the pandemic began, revealing attitudes of almost 10,000 airline passengers in 12 countries. The survey found that 8 in 10 air passengers say their travel habits will change as a result of COVID-19, with 41% planning to travel less frequently by any means. This figure rose to 9 out of 10 for passengers in the UAE. While the majority of passengers, that's 60%, feel satisfied with the aviation industry's response to the challenges of COVID-19, the survey revealed areas of opportunity for airlines to encourage passengers back to the skies. Only a third of passengers surveyed have taken a commercial flight since the pandemic began, and this appears to have sparked a shift in attitudes to flying. 4 in 10 passengers overall expect to travel less, by any means, and a third plan to fly less. Despite this change, there are early signs that travellers are beginning to feel confident about flying again. Globally, 47% of passengers surveyed expect to feel ready to fly within the next 6 months. While in the UAE, this figure rose to 60%. Passengers are currently more fearful of catching the virus abroad than on the plane. In fact, many feel they are at greater health risk in other environments, such as the gym and public transport. Recent IATA research supports this, suggesting people are more likely to be struck by lightning than catching COVID-19 on an aircraft. Almost half of passengers say that reputation is now a more significant factor when choosing an airline than it was pre-pandemic. It has therefore never been more vital for airlines to differentiate and gain a competitive edge. I asked Niels Steenstrup, Senior Vice President from Inmarsat Aviation, why they completed the survey in the first place.
But we wanted to go into a little more detail, and we wanted to ask questions to explore possible solutions, and rather than just record the scale of the problem regarding passenger attitudes and confidence levels. So that's the reason we did this research and we set out to do it. So if we start taking a look at the survey results, one of the first questions we asked is whether folks have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. And not surprisingly, a very large percentage, 85%, said they have been impacted in one way or another. The types of things that have impacted them is been worried about their health, about catching the virus. They've been worried about their financial security because of their jobs and job situations. They have actually been affected by their job situation with an impact on their finances, or their family's health has been affected. So these are the types of things we're seeing from a very large number of the respondents. If you then move into more into travel and how what the implications of travel have been, and we've asked the respondents whether they have taken any flights in 2020 since the pandemic started. And here what we see is that that nearly a third have already taken a flight in 2020. So in spite of the impact, nearly a third of the respondents have taken a flight in 2020. And that goes up to around half. So we see some big regional differences, but to about half when we look at people in the US, India, or the United Arab Emirates who said they have flown in 2020. The next thing we then looked at was what are individuals' behavior as a response to COVID-19? And again, here, what we see is quite a varied response depending on where in the world we look. So this says something about the general sentiment of people and the caution they're taking, their comfort with risk, perhaps. And it's a lot of it's driven about what's going on around them and what their national government steps they've taken to help protect the population. There's a lot of complexity, and we have to factor this in because the sentiment of travelers and how they feel about getting on a plane is to a great degree going to be driven by the overall environment in which they're living and what they are seeing on a daily basis. The speed at which people want to fly again does vary across age groups. We see that people aged 18 to 44 are much more willing to fly again within 6 months, whereas the majority of those who do not want to fly until there's a vaccine are aged over 55. not really surprising when you consider the risks related to catching COVID for different age groups. What does this mean for airlines? Is this about people needing to visit family? Is it about business travelers? Is there an opportunity for airlines to target younger people? So in terms of the approach to going to market and to reaching your passengers during COVID relative to maybe the traditional marketing that was taking place pre-COVID, there's clearly opportunities to adjust and to bring in passengers that are more likely to fly.
So how did people perceive the risk of catching COVID-19 on an aircraft or in an airport compared with other activities?
Yeah, more risky. It was areas like public transport, public toilets, and sporting events. Again, this is areas where folks are really compacted together, and you can compare a bus and an aircraft or a train car and an aircraft. There was a very strong vote there for family parties being less risky. Also, going shopping or staying at a hotel or at a rental accommodation. And it's interesting when you look at perceptions and to what degree perceptions might be driven by emotion or something of that nature, because family parties have, some of the data I've seen elsewhere shows that might have some risks associated with it. Hotels, can understand that, I think, but it's interesting to look at the differences, and a lot of it is just how people feel. And it was seen as much riskier in the United Arab Emirates and India. Now, I think there are some difference in those in terms of their degree of control, but it's a mix of personal feelings and then what's been going on in the environment around them that tend to drive these respondents. But there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. That's clear.
The full results of Inmarsat's passenger confidence tracker are available at inmarsat.com.
Thanks, Steve. I think that survey, along with one this week from Aviation Week's Transatlantic MRO event, suggesting that as recovery takes hold, deliveries combined with aircraft returning from storage should combine to increase fleet strength to 2019 levels by as early as 2021. Well, that's a good year earlier than we feared. Another sector that's also looking forward is defence. Our Insight programme, which was out on Wednesday, featured an interview with His Excellency Ahmed Al-Ohali, the governor of GAMI, Saudi Arabia's defence industry organisation, who, as well as driving the goal to localise 50% of Saudi Arabia's military spending over the next decade, is also heading the team delivering the World Defence Show next year. Well, it's well worth listening to. And you can find that military special insight programme on our websites, arabianaerospace.aero and africanaerospace.aero. So, that's it from us. Stay optimistic, and most of all, stay safe. Until next week, goodbye.